free, Tanar. You were taught to be a slave, but you have broken free. She listened, though her expression did not change. He said no more. They were silent. But it was not the silence that had been in that room before she entered. There was the breathing of two of them now, and the movement of life in their veins, and the burning of the candle in its lantern of tin, a tiny, lively sound. "How is it that you know my name?" He walked up and down the room, stirring up the fine dust, stretching his arms and shoulders in an effort to shake off the numbing chill. "Knowing names is my job, my art. To weave the magic of a thing, you see, one must find its true name out. In my lands we keep our true names hidden all our lives long, from all but those whom we trust utterly. For there is great power and great peril in a name. Once, at the beginning of time, when Segoy raised the isles of Earthsea from the ocean deeps, all things bore their own true names, and all doing of magic, all wizardry, hangs still upon the knowledge, the relearning, the remembering of that true and ancient language of the making. There are spells to learn, of course, ways to use the words, and one must know the consequences, too. But what a wizard spends his life at is finding out the names of things, and finding out how to find out the names of things. How did you find out mine? He looked at her for a moment, a deep, clear glance across the shadows between them. He hesitated a moment. I cannot tell you that. You are like a lantern swathed and covered, hidden away in a dark place. Yet the light shines. They could not put out the light. They could not hide you. As I know the light, as I know you, I know your name, Tanar. That is my gift, my power. I cannot tell you more. But tell me this. What will you do now?
I don't know.
Kossel has found an empty grave by now. What will she do?
I don't know. If I go back up, she can have me killed. It is death for a high priestess to lie. She could have me sacrificed on the steps of the throne if she wanted. And Manon would have to really cut off my head this time, instead of just lifting the sword and waiting for the dark figure to stop it. But this time it wouldn't stop. It would come down and cut off my head. Her voice was dull and slow. He frowned.
If we stay here long, he said, you are going to go mad, Tanar. The anger of the Nameless Ones is heavy on your mind, and on mine. It's better now that you're here, much better. But it was a long time before you came, and I've used up most of my strength. No one can withstand the Dark Ones long alone. They are very strong.
He stopped. His voice had sunk low, and he seemed to have lost the thread of his speech. He rubbed his hands over his forehead, and presently went to drink again from the flask. He broke off a hunch of bread, and sat down on the chest opposite to eat it. What he said was true. She felt a weight, a pressure on her mind, that seemed to darken and confuse all thought and feeling. Yet she was not terrified, as she had been coming through the corridors alone. Only the utter silence outside the room seemed terrible. Why was that? She had never feared the silence of the under-earth before. But never before had she disobeyed the Nameless Ones. Never had she set herself against them. She gave a little whimpering laugh at last. "Here we sit on the greatest treasure of the Empire," she said. "The God King would give all his wives to have one chest of it. And we haven't even opened a lid to look."
"I did," said the Sparrowhawk, chewing.
"In the dark?"
"Oh, I made a little light. The ware-light. It was hard to do here. Even with my staff it would have been hard, and without it was like trying to light a fire with wet wood in the rain. But it came at last, and I found what I was after."
She raised her face slowly to look at him. "The ring?"
"The half-ring. You have the other half."
"I have it? The other half was lost."
"And found. I wore it on a chain around my neck. You took it off and asked me if I couldn't afford a better talisman. The only talisman better than half the ring of Aerith Akbi would be the whole. But then, as they say, half a loaf's better than none. So you now have my half, and I have yours."
He smiled at her across the shadows of the tomb. "You said when I took it that I didn't know what to do with it."
"That was true."
"And you do know?"
He nodded.
Tell me what it is, the ring, and how you came upon the lost half, and how you came here, and why. All this I must know, then maybe I will see what to do."
"Maybe you will." "Very well. What is it, the ring of Aerith Akbi? Well, you can see that it's not precious looking, and it's not even a ring. It's too big.